Hello and welcome to a new How Did You Make It? The podcast in which we explore each step that has built the career path of various professionals through the discovery of their habits, passions, interests over the last few decades. I'm Yusra, your host, and today we meet Mayara. Mayara has so far lived in Brazil and in France, Paris to be exact, where she currently talks to us from. She goes into so much details on how she made it to where she is now, covering impactful conversations she had in middle school and high school. Every single experience and learning come attached with brilliant advice that she either learned at the time or on which she actually reflects on throughout our conversation. Her openness might change your perspective on how to overcome personal and professional challenges, and will invite you to start building a strong ecosystem she also nurtured and built for herself throughout her life. As a high achiever, Mayara, who identifies probably as a nerd, takes you on her scientific journey and will probably inspire you as much as she inspires me. Let's learn from her. Hi, Mayara, and welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you with us today. We had the chance to cross paths over 5 years ago, and I cannot wait to share your story. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the invitation. I believe having those conversations can unlock a lot of very important thoughts that we have and inspire brainstormings. So I think what you're doing here with this podcast is very important. I'm very thrilled to be here with you today. So how do I present myself? It's always a very tricky question, right? It throws you back then and thinking about your origins. So I am Brazilian. I was born in Brazil and I spent most of my life there and certainly my best years in terms of infancy and adolescence. And it's been 7 years that I now live in France. It has been a nice experience changing cultures and navigating those two different realities. It has made me certainly a better person in general. And I decided to study pharmacy. So this is also a very strong part of who I am. I'm a pharmacist and I have always been passionate about science since I was very young. I'm sure we're going to talk about it at some point. But science has moved me. I identify very strongly as a scientist. And I'm curious. I'm just curious. I love learning about everything and anything. I love asking questions. I have worked most of my professional life in the pharmaceutical industry, but that don't necessarily define me. I changed areas immensely inside of the industry. What I was always moved about was this curiosity of learning more, understanding more, particularly about how the body works, and as well, opening up opportunities for me to feel that I'm always learning, that I'm always evolving. That's what moved all the different professional opportunities I have had. And there is one thing that as well is always there is this focus on people. I like working with people, for people, to have a purpose, either if it's about health or supporting other people's development. I think this has always been present in my personal and professional life. And I think it defines me very nicely as well.
It's lovely to hear, Mayara. And I cannot wait to talk more about how everything started, when and how it sparked your interest, and why were you interested in science and everything around it after all. But first, can you share with us your definition of success?
Oh, that's a tough one. For me, success is to have that feeling that I'm evolving. My definition of what life's challenge is about, it's about always becoming a better version of yourself. And this is something that is very personal. Only you can define what a better version of yourself means. And learning how to find that for yourself, what this best version means and strive for it, for me, it's success on itself. There are two sentences that I absolutely love. One is a very famous one that some people here hearing us today might have already heard it. It's from Ralph Emerson. He's an American philosopher. And he says that life is a journey, not a destination. Very famous sentence, but honestly, I think it's so true. It's not about arriving in a certain place, but it is about taking joy of trying to get there. Even if you never make it, that's not important. It's all the experiences you live through trying to become who you want to become and make of your life what you want it to be. And there's a second sentence that I love, but it's probably not that famous, from Irvin Yalom. He is also an American writer. And he says that not to take possession of your life plan is to let your existence be an accident. A little bit harder as a sentence, but in essence, what he means is that you have to be purposeful with what you want. If you just think that wishing something will make it become true, unfortunately, that's not how the world works. You have to put hard work and focus on building what you want for yourself. And this sentence has influenced me a lot since I was very, very young. So back to your question, for me, success is always trying to understand what you want, because that's not very easy either, right? So searching and understanding what you want. And once you know what you want, to really have concrete actions to build that future reality for yourself, not to get stuck on the wishful thinking.
It's a great definition. And I love how you already started sharing advice barely 10 minutes in the episode. I couldn't agree more. It's difficult. It's extremely difficult to find what you want to do in life. But as soon as you do, creating those steps will help you to gradually get closer to where you want to go. And yes, you will have to put a lot of effort and a lot of work into it. But every single path is different in some way. So what better than putting your work in something you find meaning in? Mayra, can you tell us everything about your middle school years, your passion, habits, interests, and what kind of students you were?
Yeah, I think I was a very dedicated student always. I never missed class. I would always do my homework. I had very demanding parents with very high expectations of myself. So I am a single child, meaning I don't have brothers and sisters. So all the dreams and expectations of my parents were on me. And I worked very hard to try to meet those expectations, even when I was very young in middle school. I have two funny stories to share about that I think were very formative when I was in this moment of middle school. I remember once it was a really agitated week. There were the birthday of some of my relatives. And because of all that agitation of a lot of things happening, I forgot to do my homework. And I woke up one day really, I think I even dreamt about not doing my homework. So I woke up very agitated that I didn't do the thing that I was supposed to do, and a bit desperate of how am I going to show up at school and tell my teacher that I haven't done what I had to do. And I remember waking up my mother saying, what do I do? What do I do? How am I going to school and tell my teacher that I haven't done it? And I asked my mom to write a note in my notebook for my teacher saying, oh, she had a very agitated week. She forgot to do her homework, but she will do it. She committed to catching up and to not letting that happen again. And I think that is a story that conveys very well how much I felt the pressure to be perfect in a way, right? Of making sure that everything was always always done. A second example that is very nicely as well from my middle school is I always had good grades, and they never, I want to be clear here that I was not one of those students that would learn by osmosis, meaning they just sit there in a class and then they would very quickly and easily figure everything out with no need to study when they went back home. That was not me. I had to study. I had to put in the work to succeed in the classes. And I used to do that. So I used to have good grades in general. But there was one particular subject, and it was Portuguese. So Portuguese is my mother tongue. So as any country, you have the classes of your mother tongue, right? And I passed with the minimum grade.
I almost didn't, right? But I did. I did pass it. But my mom was so unhappy with the fact that I passed with the minimum grade that she called the school to ask the school to allow me to retake the class, even though I had passed it, because it was only with the minimum grade. So I think that reflects a lot the my life when I was in middle school. A lot of hard work. I was a good student, but as a result of hard work. And my favorite subject back then was math. I had a classmate that was also very good at math, as good as I was. So there was a little friendly intellectual competition between the two of us of who would get the best grades in every single test. And that was so motivating for me. It was so nice to be able to compete, but compete in a way that we were happy for each other. You know, it was not about crushing each other. It was about being able to push each other to get to the best results. And we even studied together. You know, there was no tentative of sabotaging or anything like that. No, we were really helping each other. But there was this intellectual competition in math that was very, very cool. And then in contrast, my least favorite subject was certainly physical education. I was always a nerd myself. I loved my books and my notebooks and papers, but not necessarily to run around or play soccer. For those of you who are a little bit aware about Brazil, soccer is a big thing in Brazil. So not playing soccer as a Brazilian was quite funny. So I think that a little bit defines my middle school years. I had a huge passion for Japanese culture and everything connected to mangas, animes, even Japanese music. We had the city that I used to live in, Brazil, has the biggest Japanese immigration of the whole country. So we are in a very multicultural environment that is very influenced by the Japanese culture. So I was very privileged to grow up in that environment and have very early contact with cultures that are very different from my own. And I would love this. And I also loved music. I was largely influenced by my uncle to love music, appreciate it, to start studying even the drums. So I started playing drums in middle school. I was always very social and but kind, but always a bit shy as well. So I think that kind of sums up my personality during those very formative years. I was social but shy. Very good at school, but needing to put in the work. Well,
which is great. Yes, putting the work is so important. Yes, you might be surrounded by students who don't need to put that much work into it, but you also might be surrounded by other ones who are just not telling you that they are putting the work in because you're not asking, because maybe they don't want to share that. So if you feel like sitting in class and actively listening does not bring you all the knowledge needed to succeed in class, go for it. Study hard. Put the work in. Invest in yourself. Maya, I do have two questions on what you mentioned. Would you say that thanks to your parents' active involvement, you were able to chase those grades? Do you think that you would still have gone for those if they were not that involved?
That's an excellent question. I think when someone invests on you and you can feel that investment and that expectation, you need a little bit of that. You need a little bit of that as well to understand that you can do more, that there is more than you can extract from yourself. Sometimes you don't have that visibility of how far we can go or how much we can give if you don't have someone believing on you and putting even a little bit of pressure. So I think a certain amount of pressure is extremely healthy and as well a very valid way of demonstrating care and demonstrating love and belief on your potential. It has to be a healthy amount, though. If the pressure you're receiving is actually making you feel bad about yourself, consistently bad, and it's actually hurting your self-belief instead of lifting you up, then you also have to look for help and manifest that you're not
not necessarily feeling happy about the pressure you're receiving. I had that as well. When we talk later about the high school years, there was a moment where the pressure became unhealthy, and I was privileged to be able to raise my hand and get support when that got unhealthy. So I think it's a balance. A little bit of pressure, certainly good. If the pressure is having a negative effect of how you feel about yourself, then this is where you have to raise your hand.
Hi, parents. Hope you're taking note there. Try to find a balance between supporting and listening when it gets maybe too much. Okay, I do have my second questions there. My question is on math. Do you know why you liked it?
I do not know why I liked it. At that point in time, I was fascinated by the fact that math was not about so much about interpretation. Mm-hmm. The way you do the calculation, you will always get the same results. And you can learn different ways to make calculations in different methodologies. You could be more of a spatial mathematical mind, or you can be more about really making the counts using mathematical symbols. But the facts are the facts, and you're going to get to the same result. And back then, I would find comforting to have something that, regardless of how I was going to do the calculation, I was always going to get the same results.
That's super insightful. That's true that math can have this kind of power to empower you. You know how native languages classes like Portuguese for Mayra and French for myself are trying to push you to dig into the writer's, author's thinking process, or, you know, the direction that they are trying to take and making you think about this? Well, math challenges you to think slightly differently. Actually, with math, there is only one right answer.
No, you understood me 100%. I liked the logic. It's just logic. And then when you go to the native language classes, the way you analyze sentences or texts, that's not necessarily logic. There is some logic to it, of course, not completely random. As a kid, I used to find that frustrating.
Absolutely. Well, this is great to know. And for you who are listening to us, it's okay to feel more comfortable in one rather than another. And it could also mean that it might not be for you now, but might come later in your student life. So keep working hard on both, embracing your strength in one or another, or hopefully on both. But this leads me to my last question on your middle school years, Mayra. What advice did you receive when you were still there?
I had a great story about this. It's a story of a vocational test. So a vocational test is something you take to try to help you figure out what you should do in college. And normally towards the end years of the middle school, you start already thinking and certainly getting the question from parents, from friends, if you have already figured out what you want to be when you grow up. So it starts that pressure about going from your early daydreams, because normally when you're very young, you're like, oh, I want to be a firefighter, or I want to be an astronaut, and getting to a little bit more of a realistic answer, or at least the answer people expect from you of, I want to be an engineer, or I want to be a doctor. And I was very fortunate to be studying in a school that offered a whole class that was called professional orientation. So the whole last year of my middle school, we got in touch with professionals of different areas. So we had engineers or lawyers coming to the school to tell us about their professions, how they would spend their days, what was a typical day for someone with their profession, what were the career possibilities. That was extremely rich. It was really, really rich. I had the chance to discover professions that I might not necessarily thought about, because no one from my family had those professions, and explore what they could mean. And the very end of this 1 year of discovery, was this famous vocational path.
So going back to what I told you about Little Mayara loved logic. So the prospect of having a test that I was going to answer some questions and the test was going to tell me what was going to be my profession of the future was awesome. I said, wow, I found the thing for me. Suddenly, I don't need to think about what I want. This test is going to tell me. So I took the test. And it was the very last day of school that they were giving the test results back. And in Brazil, normally you follow the order of your name, not your family name, but really your name. And since Mayara is my name, in alphabetical order, I'm quite in the end of receiving the results. So I started seeing my friends opening up their results and sharing what was written there. So suddenly someone will say, wow, veterinarian, that's so cool. And then another person opening up and saying, oh, teacher, wow, I haven't thought about being a teacher. That's so cool. So there was this build up of expectations that when I got my results, despite the fact that the results was supposed to be a little book describing about preferences, I went straight to the last page because the last page was the one that was supposed to give me the answer of what was going to be my profession of the future. And for my surprise, it was written inconclusive. And also shocked. I was very shocked. And my message from that inconclusive was, wow, maybe I'm not good enough for anything. So the test couldn't find something that I'm good enough to be, and therefore it's showing back as inconclusive. I was so ashamed that I closed the test. I shoved it in my backpack and I started to change the subject a little bit with my friends so that I wouldn't tell them that I got this inconclusive. And when the class was over, everyone started leaving and I went to see the teacher. I said, listen, I got an inconclusive and I don't want to do with this. And this was a very formative moment for me because that teacher took the time to sit down with me and to explain that result to me. She opened up, there was a table in that test showing my preferences between sciences, human areas, such as geography or history, and then more inclinations toward health sciences. And she showed me that the bars of that chart, they were more or less in the same level, meaning that there was not an area that was showing up very clearly as a preference. And then she said, the interpretation you're making of those results, that is that you're not good for anything, is actually the other way around. You can be whatever you want. You have such a diversified array of passions and interests that you really can be whatever you want. And so she helped convert a message that for me was a limiting and sad message into a message of empowerment and discovering that I had a superpower, and the superpower was this flexibility of being able to become whatever I wanted.
You can be whatever you want. Excuse me? This is such a powerful sentence to hear for teenager. Teachers. Yes, teachers who are like her, please be louder in classrooms. Please, please, please be louder in classrooms. And every single teenager who is listening to us needs to hear that. Mayara, this is so powerful. I'm so glad you got a teacher like her. This is incredible. And you know what? What strikes me as well, and I want to go back to this exact story, is that you had this information. You decided to hide it from your classmates, which is absolutely fair. But I loved how you went to your teacher and tried to understand it. I do understand why you did that, because it highlights your curiosity and by trying to understand what was happening to you, even if you were facing the shame that you were mentioning. but you try to leave the ambiguity instead of spiraling. And there is a great takeaway from this. If you, yes, you, you who are listening to us now, if you are facing a challenge, don't shut down. Try to understand it. And if the teacher in the classroom is not helping you, try your best to find another person who you can trust to help you make a situation clearer. And try to reflect on it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think one thing that made a ton of difference in all the different stages of my life was to have these little pockets of advisors, of adults that I really trusted and that, above all, I knew that they had my best interest in mind. And whatever they were going to tell me was going to be something to help me and support me. So I always identified those key teachers that we feel a sense of connection with, even if they are teachers from previous grades that you have the ability to keep contact with them. My parents also had friends that were also teachers, and I used to be very close to some of them, where I could ask as well some questions and some advices. You always have as well this person in your family, be it your parents or an aunt or an uncle that you're a bit closer to, that you can also be part of this circle of advisors that you can ask those questions. I always processed my doubts or my fears by speaking. Not everybody processes the same way, but for the ones that have a little bit more of a extrovert personality and therefore like to speak, having this trusted circle of advisors that you can manifest what you think can be so crazy powerful. It's also powerful for the introverts, but then there's the barrier of having to trust probably even more to be able to open up and explain how you're feeling and what are the doubts that are maybe crippling in your head. But you said something that I want to emphasize. The most important thing of it all is do not just shut down about it and keep it for yourself, because then you are losing an opportunity to reflect and to learn from any experience you're going through.
So you need to remember three things. Ask questions, lead by curiosity, and we are all doing this for the first time. So asking the questions will only bring you at least some clarity. And if you don't have those trusted advisors, we hope that you can find comfort within this podcast and within those episodes where we will try to deep dive into those questions. And you will realize that growing up, everyone is lost. Everyone is asking questions. Now, moving into the next part of your life, Maera, which is high school, what type of student were you? What were your habits, passions, interests, and were you still interested in math? Were you still driven towards it?
Well, high school it's such an important moment of life. And I say that for myself, but I guess for most people around, it's a moment that you're figuring out so much about yourself. And it was totally the case for me. It was a moment of a lot of reflection, a lot of maturing, a lot of experimentation as well to figure out things that I liked and things that I not necessarily liked. And one interesting thing is that conclusion that I had on the last year of middle school, which was maybe I have a broader range of interest than I initially thought, really manifested itself in high school. Because in high school, my interests for the subjects changed. And suddenly I fell in love with politics, which is a part of geography, and literature. So I didn't like the Portuguese classes when I was in middle school. But then suddenly when I got to high school, I had a fantastic literature teacher that helped me fall in love with books and stories and narratives and the interpretations those could have. And at the same time, I started to struggle with physics, which
one can say it's close to math, right? And close to that logic that I used to love when I was a bit younger. So the balance between those STEAM subjects, so those subjects that are connected to math, to technology, to logic, I started to struggle on those. And the humanities that I used to struggle in the past, I started to fall in love with. So it was first very confusing for me. It was like, what happened to me? Did the part of me broke that used to perform very well in those more straightforward or logic subjects? But it was just the beginning of a pattern that then I would see for my whole life, which is my interests and my passions would fluctuate depending on the people that were around me, the context, the moment I was living. So different areas of my personality and different interests would surface as a reaction of my own maturing path and as well the people around me. Every time there was an awesome teacher, super passionate about the subject, I would get the tendency to fall in love for the subject too and to suddenly find myself liking it more than I did before. So I was very lucky to have had several of those very passionate teachers that would love the subject, but would also love teaching and know how to reach out to me and to make me understand how cool that subject could be. And I allowed myself to as well pursue them, that passion, to say, if this person loves it so much, there's something there, maybe. Let me see what it is in there for me and to explore those areas. I continued being a super applied student. I was preparing myself for university. So, for example, there was 1 year, the last year of high school, that I was really having a crazy schedule. I was doing the normal high school classes in the morning. In the afternoon, I was doing a preparatory course for university. In the evenings, I was taking additional classes to boost some areas that I wasn't performing as good as I could to really be competitive for the university entry of university exams. So it was a very insane year. And that was the moment that I refer earlier when we were talking, that the pressure of this very tight schedule, plus the pressure that I would constantly receive from my parents. My parents, in Brazil, the grades go from 0 to 10. Each country has a little bit of a different way of looking at grades. In Brazil, it's from 0 to 10. If I would get home with a 9, it wasn't a reason for celebration. And for the first time in my life, I felt the weight of that. I suddenly that pressure was not only giving me the good energy of putting myself into it, but I was also having the negative effects of not sleeping, feeling nervous about it, not being able to celebrate the accomplishments that I was doing on the path. And I had the chance to raise my hand and ask for help. My parents wouldn't understand what was wrong and why I was suffering, but they gave me the opportunity to go see a psychologist back then. And that was a very transformative experience to be able to talk with someone. I could find a psychologist that I really trusted and I really admired. So I could open myself to her. And she helped me navigate that environment. She helped me understand my self-worth, why I was feeling pressured, and she taught me very clever mechanisms of how to have those conversations with my parents, for example, about how I was feeling and how they could help me feeling better. And it was very good. It's something that if you feel you're going through a situation that you don't know how to unlock, you have talked to these trusted people that you have around you, but you couldn't necessarily get the best advice yet to unlock how you feel. Looking for professional support is a great idea, honestly. I wish everyone would go through the support of a psychologist at some point in their lives
because it's really about making you much, much stronger to face any challenges or headwinds you have in your life. And well, to finish up, I continue being very social, but I also learned how to embrace the fact that I was nerd. Because when I was younger, I was a little bit shy about the fact that I was a bookworm, that I loved books and that I loved learning. And because that were not the characteristics that made people very popular. But during high school, I also learned to earn this and to find it very cool that I was a nerd and to see the beauty on it. And it was nice. It was nice. Today, I'm a very proud nerd. And that made me a happier person, for sure.
Thank you, Mara, for being so open. And this is very interesting. There are so many takeaways from what you just shared. So, some teachers will be able to transmit the passion they have for the subject they are teaching. Others won't. But don't forget one thing. Your commitment to each class is needed regardless of how they deliver it. I do hope you get as lucky as Mayara to get teachers who are just bringing this fascination towards the subject. But if you don't, you will have to hang in there. You will soon be able to determine what you like doing more. But to manage to do that, you have to sit down and understand the class and where it wants to take you.
Completely agree. Completely agree. And I can give a real example for myself. I had that case with history. History is a subject that during middle school and high school, I never necessarily found a teacher that made me fall in love for it. So I went through the class a little bit without so much care. But after I finished the studies, eventually that passion came. And today I find myself as someone that loves history and honestly regrets not having put more efforts into that subject when I was in school, because today I can see how great it is and how interesting it is. So completely agree with your point. Every single subject has a reason to be. They were chosen to be put in front of us to help us experiment what are all the possibilities of knowledge that the world has in front of us. And so there is value and there is potential into exploring each one of those.
So do hang on. It's going to get better. And Mayara, to go back to what you shared earlier, it was an intense schedule. And yes, calling for help is crucial. Your studies are going to be so long. And it's a whole marathon. It's not a race. If you don't ask for support now, you might burn out. And burning out might be a concept which is not close to home now. But it's the idea that you're taking, that at some point, drowning, if you reach that point where you cannot handle working for even an hour because how exhausted you are, it's okay to feel overwhelmed and trying to find a better way to continue being dedicated and finding a better approach.
Yeah, totally. And no one can really know what you're feeling about things. Only you know what you're feeling. Only you know what you're going through. So sometimes people around you will realize that you're going through something and you're suffering, and they will proactively reach out to you offering help. But sometimes this will not happen because they have no idea how are you really feeling and how bad the situation really is. So there is a moment where you have to take the responsibility to inform people that you're not well, because they might not notice, not because they don't care about you, but because really no one really knows how you feel about things. And that was exactly the case. I was lucky enough to have parents that really loved me, but they had no idea that I was not coping well with the pressure they were putting on me. So I think and one other message, I think sometimes we think it's about not being able to cope it by myself. I don't see it that way at all. everyone said how brave I was being of raising my hand and asking for help. And I saw how much that made a difference, not only in that particular moment of my life, but how much I really learned how to be stronger in general and had a long-lasting effect of that support in my life after that. So I honestly couldn't recommend more for you to raise your hand and be transparent with how you're going through things.
Thank you so much, Mayra. And by any chance, do you remember any of the mechanisms you can use to have this conversation with your parents?
Yes, definitely. I remember tons of them. I remember that moment of high school is also a moment that you are starting to experiment with a little bit more of freedom. You're being able to move around the city maybe a little bit more than you were before, or arrive home a little bit later. So you start testing as well those limits with your parents. And one great advice that I got from my psychologist back then was, she told me, you are their only child, and therefore every step you're going through with your life is the first time they're dealing with it too. They're also learning how to be parents. There's not a book on how to be a great parent. So they're also experimenting with you as much you're experimenting with them. So they also don't know how to do most of their times. So try to understand what is their rationale behind some things. So I was, at that point in time in my life, I was very frustrated with all the no's I was hearing from my parents. No, you can't go to that party, or you can't go to that trip. And I was just going to get frustrated and shut down and not want to discuss and to talk to them. And my psychologist told me, try to understand what is their real concern by telling you no. So instead of shutting down, ask questions. So I started asking them, what are you worried about? Because if you're telling me not to go in that trip, it's because you're probably worried about something. Because I'm pretty sure you're trying to protect me with that decision. So as well, trusting the good intention was also one advice she gave me. Trust there is good intention on those decisions. So I said, I trust there is a good intention on why you're not letting me go. Can you help me understand what it is and what are you afraid of? And depending on what was the concern, I could uncover concerns from my parents that I had no idea they had. And I could as well help reassure them that those concerns were not going to be real. So there was a moment, for example, where they said, place you want to go, this beach you want to go with your friends, is a place where we know there is a lot of drug abuse. So we don't want you being there. And then I asked, are you guys worried that I am going to do drugs? Or are you guys worried that the place itself is unsafe because there are people there that use drugs? And they said, well, we trust you that you're not going to do drugs, but we don't trust the others. So there is the unsafety of the place. And then I answered back saying, if we were not going to this particular beach, if we looked for another beach, would then this be an option? And they said, yes, that would be an option. So you saw, because I could ask those questions and understand a little bit more, trusting the good intention, what they were trying to protect me from, I was much better positioned to negotiate with them how I could then unlock that situation and transform that negative answer eventually to a positive answer. It didn't work all the time. Let me put it out there. Sometimes the no continued being a no. But I got some yeses out of it. And it also provided me with a better understanding that I never had of what were the concerns and the worries my parents had on about me.
Good intention. It's not you against them. They are trying their best to understand the situation and to protect you from potential harm. And it might be difficult to understand it at first. It might not be phrased in a way that you understand it as being for your best interest. But try to think about where they're coming from with their guidance and interdictions.
And as well, this fact of they're also potentially learning how to be parents. So if you see that they have done something that was very unfair and that tended not to be the right choice in your perspective, that they made a choice that was not the best. Well, you know, it's tough. They make mistakes as well. They are also humans. So learning how to see your parents through these more generous lenses of the fact that they are also human, they're also learning, and sometimes they make mistakes can also be very helpful.
Agreed. I do have a last question on your high school years, Mayra. Were you taking any classes outside of regular classes, and which were there?
Yes, I do remember. There were one on physics, because that's the subject that suddenly high school was not doing so well. And the other one was on how to write texts, because one very important part of the uni exams was to be able to produce reports and produce narratives. And they were so very different, right? Between physics and between learning how to write and to storytell, those are very different subjects. Two great teachers that I remember and hold dear to this day, still have contact with them. And I ended up in different parts. With physics, let's say I learned to tame it. I'm not a great physicist today. If you give me one of those problems that I would solve in high school for the exams today, I would probably not be able to do it. So I got better in a circumstantial level to be able to address the need I had in that moment. But it's not something that I became particularly good at. For learning how to write, it's a completely different story. I found by doing those classes a lifelong passion now. So today I love to write. I don't necessarily write novels, but I love to write it for myself. I write a lot in LinkedIn, for example, which is a professional social media. Articulate my ideas and my thoughts into stories and to narratives is something that I got better for my whole life after those classes. And I discovered a passion that I not necessarily had until that point in time.
And how were you able to improve your written skills?
By reading. I already loved how to read, but I was not necessarily interested in the science behind how things are written. So I would love to read, but I never necessarily reflected what led that author to say that sentence, what he was trying to tell me. And suddenly that teacher showed me this world of what is behind the curtains. She helped me to see that every sentence a writer puts on paper had very carefully chosen words that meant something specific. It was not randomly chosen. There is the science behind it and a lot of meaning that can be hidden behind the choice of one word versus another. And suddenly I found that so clever, so intellectually stimulating, trying to pick the words myself when I write, depending on what I wanted to mean and how impactful I want to be. She also taught me mechanisms such as how to insert a hook in a text, for example, for the reader to be curious about what is going to follow, or how to be very descriptive with the environment, say how it smells and how's the light, so that suddenly the reader can be transported to the environment you're trying to describe. And I found that fascinating. I found so stimulating in terms of intellectually stimulating, that that's what made me fall in love with, to realize that how more complex and interesting writing could be. It was not just words on paper. It's about constructing a narrative.
And did you need to prepare any high school diploma like we do in France? And did you know what you wanted to do after high school at that moment? And if you did, how did you find out?
It's similar but different. Similar in the sense that as soon as you finish your high school, it is considered finished and you already get your diploma. But if you want to do higher educations, then there is an exam that you have to pass. And it's also, like in France, an unified exam that everyone does the same exam. But it's only if you really want to accomplish a high education. If you don't, you don't need to do it. And it is in that moment that that exam that you already need to have chosen what you want to do, because then you have to put it in the form when you apply for it, what you want to do in high school studies. So normally the last year of your high school, it's really dedicated to figure it out, because by the end of that year, you're going to have to know if you want to go straight to university. You can also take a gap year. You can also do other things and then decide to come back to university and then do this exam later. But the path that I have chosen was to go to university straight from high school. And therefore, I needed to do my exam by the end of the year. So this last year was the year where I explored what could be the possibilities. I ended up being divisive between three areas that were very different. Oh, what a surprise. It has been a bit the theme of my podcast, I guess. I was between being a pharmacist, being a chemical engineer, and being a journalist. With that recent discovered passion of writing, then came this idea of, can I be a journalist then? Can I write as a profession? So I went about trying to learn what could be the different careers and job opportunities that each one of those careers could go for, because I felt I'm not going to be able to choose based on my passion. I really would love to do the three of them. So passion is not going to be a driver. It's normally the biggest driver. You have to listen to your heart. But I already did that, and I still had three things on the table. So I had to find some other criteria that could help me figure out between the three of them. And then it was a very, let's say, practical criteria that I ended up finding. I tried to understand very practically, what can I do with that diploma? What kinds of roles I can have? What kind of jobs I can have? And I saw that for the three of them, the career that offered the larger spectrum of opportunities was to be a pharmacist. And there was this idea of, and something that I really didn't know until I started to research and asking tons of questions. So if there is an advice for you, you have to ask tons of questions to a lot of people. Every person is going to give you a different answer. And it's not about their particular answer. It's about you capitalizing on all those different answers and then figuring out for you what does it mean? What can it mean? And asking people about what a pharmacist can do, I was very surprised with what was the breadth of the possibilities. Because I could work in a pharmacy, for example. So when you go to a pharmacy to buy anything, you're going to see that there is a pharmacist there trying to guide you through what is the best choice of medicine for you in that moment of purchase. So you can do that. So you can be in direct contact with people going to a pharmacy. You can work in a hospital, for example, helping people that are hospitalized to understand what is the best treatment options that they have and to follow through with their treatment. So very close to patients that are in need of a treatment. You can work in a lab. And there are two types of labs. There is the lab that does exams on people. So when you go to someplace to collect blood, for example, to have a blood test, the person who will analyze that test might be a pharmacist, for example. So it can be these kinds of pharmacists that analyze tests and analyze results. Or you can work on a lab producing science and trying to come up with new molecules, new treatments, new understanding about diseases that can change the practice of medicine and the disease paths. And then, last but not the least, you can also work on the pharmaceutical industry in several different roles. I was very surprised with how different it was. And that's what moved me, because I said, I have learned enough about myself until this point to know that I change and that my own interests evolve because my personality evolves, but as well because my surrounding evolves. So what between those three careers, journalist, chemical engineering, or pharmacist, can allow me to continue changing and enable that change? And I felt that it was pharmacy for me because I knew that I could then have all this breadth of roles I could pick from. And therefore, I could, I'm sure, find happiness with that diploma that I was going to have. And I knew that there had great job opportunities and career prospects that also made the choice seem like the right one back then.
This is so interesting. I love how you had this kind of introspection exercise and be like, okay, this is who I am. I'm someone who's very curious. I might be super interested about something now, but I've seen that I've changed my mind a couple of times on different things. So because this is who I am and that I have three options in front of me, I have to choose also something that matches my personality and my aspiration is that I have the flexibility to move from one thing to another. So how can I empower myself to still live my truest version? So I love this approach. And I do have, however, a question prior to identifying all those three. So
was it thanks to the presentation you had a couple of years ago of the different career paths?
That helped. But that was the last year of middle school. So I still had the high school to go through and to think and to continue asking people and interviewing people. For example, I identified people I knew that were pharmacists, that were chemical engineers, that were journalists, to ask them about how was their ride, how was their experience with the university, but as well later their experience in life, to better understand what that meant. And if I felt that I identified three interests as well in the three different areas that I loved. So the pharmacist would match very nicely with a curiosity I had since I was very, very young, that I wanted to know how a pill for your headache would know that it has to go to your head because it's your head that hurts. I used to find that magical. I would see people taking the pill and I was like, how does the pill know? It's crazy. So I had that curiosity that I always existed on me that matched very nicely with pharmacists and with a career in science in general. But then my passion for logic and structure said, can I marry this scientific side with engineering? And that's what gave the chemical engineering path. And then the journalist was just like, wow, I found this love that I have for writing now. And my mother is a journalist as well. So there was also an influence there. Should I explore this as well? And I think one thing that I have learned as well is to be to explore before trying to make a decision, really. Because I think we put a lot of pressure on us on making a decision as quickly as possible and as early as possible. Because let's be frank, most of us feel uncomfortable with not knowing what to do. So this uncertainty of not knowing sometimes pushes us to make the decision as quickly as possible. But learning how to embrace that uncertainty for a period and say, I will not know until I know, and I will take my time to not knowing and exploring and asking questions and telling people, I don't know yet, stop asking, giving me my time, help me figure this out instead of asking if I already know. And then pushing this decision as late as possible so that you can allow yourself the time to explore. And it's fine, it should be fine. Most of the pressure to figure things out come from ourselves and trying to get rid of the uncertainty. But embrace that uncertainty of that moment. Make yourself curious. Ask tons of questions. If you don't know anybody in the areas you think you might be interested, ask people who you can talk to, because that helped me immensely.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right. And I think if you can't still find someone, we are in the age of having access to so much information online. So if you don't know someone, you can read about that role, about that job, about everything. So don't think about what you're missing. Think about how can I find that information somewhere? Because we have access, and you shouldn't put barrier to yourself into like, okay, I don't have anyone around me who can guide me. You should be like, okay, I don't have anyone. How can I find that? And I think the first exercise that I think we should learn from Mayara now is, who am I? Am I a curious being? Am I someone who needs a routine instead? I don't want to have changes in my path. Or do I want something that is a little bit more adventurous? Like trying to sit down and understand who you are and then go for that information can also be an approach. Think about the fact that there is no right or wrong way to make that decision. It just take time. And exactly what Mayara just said, we are all lost.
Completely agree with you, 100%. And I like one thing that you said, to remove the pressure of that decision. Yes, it's an important decision, I'm not going to lie, but it's not a dead end. Nothing tells you that you cannot change your mind even later and say, I want to do different studies. I changed my mind. Or to work on a field that is different from the studies that you got and the diploma that you got. This is more and more possible in the world that we live today versus the past. So try to as well take this decision with seriousness, but with lightness as well. It is to remove the extreme pressure that we normally put ourselves or other people put on us in that moment. There are still going to be plenty of opportunities to change your mind later in your life too.
Thank you so much, Mayara. I think this is very insightful, and this is a great thing to remember as well, just for the idea that every choice you make is not set in stone. It's all about, again, taking all the advice you've shared so far and ask questions, do your research, talk to the people. Your environment will change so much. So the people around you have different set of knowledge. So if you also ask them, if they know someone in that field, can also help you understand a whole new area, a whole new job, a whole opportunities out there. So exactly, the most important is to be curious and ask the questions. So now that you choose pharma, can you tell us a little bit more about those studies? And if someone is listening to us, like in considering doing the same thing, do you think there is a kind of personality and habits they need to succeed there?
Well, first of all, to say that I don't regret for a second having studied pharmaceutical sciences. So I'm happy to say that it's a wonderful field with a lot of career opportunities. If you can work very closely with patients, so if you're a person that gets motivated by this real support in a moment of health challenges, to also consider pharmaceutical studies. Normally we think about doctors or nurses, but the pharmacists are also there in that moment. Or if you're also someone that really loves precision, then normally we think mathematics or think physics, but there's also that in pharmacists, being a researcher, for example. So there is really a broad array of personalities you can have to succeed in the pharmaceutical sciences area. But there is one thing that is key, and it's curiosity. As any field in science evolves a lot. What we consider completely known and obvious today will be challenged and will evolve tomorrow, because that's the nature of science. Something is true until it's proven that it's not, and a new science arrives. And we are lucky to live in a moment in the world where there is a lot of research being produced, there is a lot of knowledge being produced. So there's also this need for pharmacists to keep up to speed with the emergence of science and being open to challenge your own concepts. If you're a very dogmatic individual, if you like truths that will last for your whole life, probably not the best area, because every single concept that you build will eventually be challenged and some of them will be debunked. So you're going to have to be open to accept that the world we live in, we don't necessarily 100% comprehend, and be part of the movement to drive more understanding of the nature of our existence and the magical elements that make our body work. That's where I think there is a lot of passion to be sucked into the pharmaceutical environment. And if you're someone like me that likes to keep possibilities open and have a lot of flexibility, can also be something very nice to consider.
And can you tell us about your studies? What was it like to study pharma?
I entered the university very young. I was 17 when I started university. And I think that was hard for me because most people around me were a bit older. Sometimes they did preparatory courses to be able to be accepted in university. So they not very often had 1, 2, 3, even 4 years more than me. And I wasn't even legally an adult yet. In Brazil, you're legally an adult with 18. So I was close, but not necessarily there. Okay, there are a lot of things that I couldn't do versus other people in university. So there was this moment of feeling really like a kid surrounded by adults. I felt that everyone around me were adults and I was the only kid there. So there was this very real feeling for me that in the beginning was a bit challenging, but it also built a sense of how privileged I was to be able to be accepted in university at such a young age. So I decided to try to reframe that challenge into an opportunity and something positive. So instead of feeling, oh, I'm the only young person here, it's going to be tough, trying to see this as, look how amazing it is that I have this opportunity of being here so young and advancing my studies in such a nice fashion. So I think that was the first struggle. And then that struggle derived the fact that I felt that they were better prepared to handle some of the pressures of university than necessarily I was. I went with the university with a thinking that it was going to be a continuation of high school, that it was going to feel like high school, but it didn't feel like high school at all. It was a completely different environment. No one's checking if you did your homework or if you even understood what's being discussed in class. The accountability over if you're learning or not completely shifts from the teacher to you. And you have to be mature enough to accept and own that accountability, that now, if you don't take care of your own studies and if you don't work to make sure that you learn, no one will be checking on you. There's a lot of freedom, but the freedom comes with the responsibility of understanding that it's on you to make sure that you have learned. I struggled with that in the beginning, particularly the first 6 months. But then I think with hard work and with commitment, I was able to then understand this new environment I was in with a lot of help as well from colleagues, from friends, from those old teachers that I built relationships with in high school. I went back to some of them and then I could then finally figure out how different it was, the environment I was, and how different it demanded me to be.
You are indeed the only one responsible for your success at uni. No one will call you out on not studying. It's you and you. So go for it. Give everything you have. So talking about your career days. So you started working in Brazil and then moved to another country. As someone who moves countries as well and surrounded by people who move countries themselves, we tend to forget how big of a step it is and how bold and courageous you kind of need to be to go for it. My question to you, Maya, is how did you build the courage to move across the Atlantic?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I agree with you that we tend to forget how courageous you need to be to make a move like that, because you're leaving behind your whole notion of how society is organized, your culture. There are things that are in autopilot when you are in your own country that you then have to turn off that autopilot in the new country. And that's very tiresome to have to think things that you have never thought before because you had the chance to be an autopilot for some of those. We can talk about it a bit more. But the move to France for me happened in a very privileged situation because I already worked for the company I currently work for back in Brazil. So I was already an employee for them there. And I had offered the chance to do this internal transfer to France. And let me tell you why it's a privileged opportunity for two reasons. First, because when you have a company that is behind you, they orchestrate your move in administrative terms, which is a lot of work in terms of visa, physically moving your stuff from one place to another. Only having someone helping with that was already an immense privilege. But there is a second aspect as well. When you're moving countries, there's so much around you that is changing. So your environment is changing, your apartment or the place you live in changes, the people around you change. Suddenly you don't have necessarily all your family and your friends around you anymore. Even the simplest things get complex. I will give a silly example. I remember going to the supermarket when I arrived in France, looking at the brands of soap that were available and not recognizing any because all the brands were different from Brazil. And suddenly I was like, wow, I don't even know how to choose soap. It's something so basic and I don't know how to do it. So that's what I meant with turning off the autopilot, right? Going to the supermarket, I knew the brands I wanted. So buying stuff was just a no-brainer type of exercise for me in Brazil. And suddenly it wasn't anymore. I had to think things through and struggle to read the labels and understand what things were for and what was better than other and the costs associated. So even the simplest things become complex, and being able to do an internal transfer, at least there is something that is stable. And it's a little bit your work environment, because normally you know at least a couple of colleagues in the place that you work. The corporate culture of that company can be a little bit similar from the two countries. And it was the case for me. The corporate culture was a little bit the same. The teams I would work with were a little bit the same. So to have that one aspect of stability when everything else around you is changing was quite a privilege to have and very anchoring for me to be able to get the courage to say, yes, let me try to have this opportunity a thousand of miles away from my home.
And what advice would you tell someone who's thinking about taking this big step but still has doubts or as simple as fear?
Do it. It's going to be a transformative experience and it's not going to be easy, but it will make you such a different person and you're going to learn immensely about yourself. There's nothing I have learned more in this move than things about myself, things I took for granted that now I can see much, much clearer. There is this very silly sentence that some people say that the animal that knows the least about water is the fish because it's surrounded by water and therefore it doesn't necessarily know what it means not to have water. It is the same about identity as well. When you are included in your own identity, your country identity, you don't know what it is. So back then, so 7-8 years ago, if you would ask me what it means to be a Brazilian, I wouldn't know, because I was there and that was all I knew. But today, being able to live a different society that is organized different, that has different values, then I'm much more capable of looking back, tell you what it means to be a Brazilian and appreciate it as well. And as well, learn to appreciate a new way of organizing itself, of having a society based on different values and being able to see what is good and what's not so good of the different ways of having a country or having a society organized. So it is, I can see a clear difference between people who have had the chance to make this this move and live somewhere else from other people in terms of how mature they get to understand and appreciate differences.
I love the reflection you have here, Maya. And even if you are geographically away from home, you're closer than ever. If you sit down with someone who asks you a question about your culture, you can tell them everything about it because you're able to reflect on it and its beauty. It makes you a richer person. Because you have now both cultures, for you, Mayara, and for everyone who's surrounding me. And you're able now to take everything that you need from one or the other. And now going back to your work experience, what have you liked so far from your early work and what learning do you have from each opportunity?
So I try to drive a lot of change in my own scope. So in the very beginning of my career, I changed jobs a lot to be able to really accumulate new experiences, working with new people that had different personalities. And by doing that, accelerate my development. So in that sense of in the beginning, particularly in the beginning of your career, it's going to be true as well for the late stages. But particularly when you're starting, there's no wrong move. You can really allow yourself to do crazy different things, working marketing one day and in finance in another, and then become a salesperson and then go back to telemarketing. And no one's going to blink an eye. And it is such an interesting way of putting yourself through different experiences and accumulating that accelerated development. I did that. It was great for me. Each one of those different opportunities helped me grow, helped me realize how to work with different personalities, different types of businesses as well that have different challenges and different cultures. So today I feel much more prepared to deal with diversity and the diversity of the world because I allowed myself from very, very on to experiment and maximize this experimentation.
I think a big advice we could share now is try to join a sector where you can change, if change might be something you would be looking for.
And I think the world has changed so much in that aspect, because if we talk about sometimes with our parents, but grandparents and the people around us, we would find a lot of examples of someone who has done one single thing their whole lives. Or have worked for the same company for 20, 30, 40 years. This is still possible, and there's nothing wrong with it. But more and more people are allowing themselves to experiment and change jobs, change departments, change companies. And more we are becoming a world where what matters are your skills and the experiences you have had. Not necessarily the job titles or the departments. And so all of this infrastructure is organizing itself to enable us more and more to make those changes and to feel good about those changes. So it's a wonderful moment to start a professional life.
New jobs will be created in the next 5-10 years. So no one will be ready for those, but being able to develop a certain set of skills which will open those doors in the future. So as soon as those exist and those are of interest for you, you'll be just able to grab them and go for them. It's absolutely aligned on everything you just said. And it takes us to, how does your day-to-day look like now?
So not surprisingly, I changed a lot and I experiment on different things. In the beginning of my career, I was in a sector that is called regulatory affairs. What it means, it is that it's the people that interpret the scientific studies that are done about a new product, and they analyze if the science the company is producing is enough to prove that new pharmaceutical product is safe and effective for patients. And so by that description, you can already start grasping that it's a little academic in nature. You have to like to study, you have to like to learn, to problem solve. It's quite structured as a piece of work. So if you are someone that likes structure and following a certain path of logic, can be a quite interesting area to explore. But then, today I work with digital transformation. And when I say that, there are some people that immediately think about technology, artificial intelligence, Gen AI, ChatGPT. They're not wrong, but the core of what I work is actually with people. How we as individuals can get ready to embrace those new tools, embrace that new reality. So what is the future of our skills? What are the future of the jobs? What are the future of ways of working and of our culture and our behaviors? That's what I work with. By that description, you can already start to grasp that it is very much more unpredictable than analyzing scientific studies. It's fast evolving. And that's what it makes very exciting. Not only because technology is evolving insanely fast, but as well because every time you're working with people, it's already implicit that it's going to be about being creative and being adaptable, because you never really know how people are going to react to a certain change or to a certain emerging trend. So all of that to show how everything is possible, because I started in a career where structure and problem solving, being academic was very important. And now I am in a field that is about creativity and adaptability and working with how to help people manage change. But there is one thing that connects it, and I think that is an important message as well. Not only that you can change and you can adapt and you can evolve and you can find different fields that nurture different parts of your interests, but as well that you have to have something that connects it. That is the element, the red thread that guides your decisions going forward. For me, it was this strong sense of purpose that the pharmaceutical industry brings me, that what I'm doing is ultimately to support medicines getting in the hands of patients. Was it analyzing scientific dossiers, or is it now helping people inside of the company getting prepared for the usage of new technology? Both of them were enabling that mission and that purpose of supporting health for people. So if you have found something that resonates with you, and it doesn't need to be very clear in the beginning, you will also figure it out as you go. But eventually finding what makes you get out of bed in the morning and how can you make it real through your career moves.
Yes, absolutely. The purpose is something you should definitely be looking into. But you know what? It doesn't need to be within your job. You can have it on the side through volunteering or as simple as a passion project or activities on the side. You will be able to find something eventually, but you have to start looking for it. And if you are curious about the regulatory affairs world that Mayra just mentioned, this job exists in so many sectors. It doesn't need to be in the pharmaceutical field. It exists in the public, private sector. If you just type it online, you'll see that job exists everywhere. And Mayra, we are reaching the last two questions, and I would love to discuss mentorship. Did you have a mentor? And if you did, what did they teach you?
I had so many, so many. I was very lucky. And sometimes I had people who formally acted as mentors or sponsors, but I also had people who just inspired me and I admired them. And because of that, I could get motivated and learn from them. So I think it's, you can have all of those three. You can have formal mentors, formal sponsors, and also just people you admire and that inspire you. And all the three of them can have impact on your path. And just a parenthesis before I dig a bit deeper, the difference between mentors and sponsors, in case that's not so clear. So a mentor is someone who probably has faced the same challenges that you're looking into facing, and therefore can help you understand what kind of actions you can make. So if you're trying to learn, for example, how to be a better public speaker, a mentor normally is someone you already consider as a good public speaker and therefore can help you unlock that learning. A sponsor is slightly different. A sponsor is someone who will mention your name in a room full of opportunities. So someone that will help you get new opportunities when you're not there, when you're not in the room. So someone that knows your work, knows your worth, and is ready to vouch for you. We do have mentors that can act as sponsors as well, but it's important to understand that difference so that you can collect both in your life. Great mentors, but as well, great sponsors. And I had, when you asked me, like, do you think about something particularly that changed the course of your path? I immediately felt about three different leaders, two female leaders and one male leader that really changed my course and had a strong impact in me and in my career. And the three of them for the same reason, because they believed in me. They saw my potential. They showed me I was ready for bigger things, even when I wasn't sure. And they empowered me and made me feel trusted and supported to take those steps. So it's a mix between believing in me and sometimes believing in me more than I believed in myself at a certain point, and as well, empowering me to then make the best usage of that trust and that opportunity. So I think the three of them have done the same in different moments of my career, and I couldn't be where I am without them.
Wow. It's so inspiring and also so important. We realize how it's not a one woman or one man job. It's the result of your environment and how sometimes people can proactively reach out to you and see the potential that you have, or you just have been working very, very rigorously and demonstrated so many behavioral skills that are talking for you if you're not being proactive. But I do have some questions there. Do you remember how they empowered you?
Yes. All of them at some point saw that I was going to say no to an opportunity because I felt I was not ready, and came talk to me and say, you are ready. Tell me a little bit more about why you think you're not. And then I would describe all my insecurities and all my fears. And they would always say, what is the worst thing that can happen? And I would describe this very apocalyptic scenario where I fail miserably and all my life's lost. And they would always come back to me and say, first, how likely it is that you're really going to fail that miserably? Second, we are in this together. You're not doing it by yourself. If we are giving you that chance, it's because we believe in your potential and we believe that you can make it, and we're going to be in this path together. So in different ways, each one of their with their own style,
the message was always the same. It's that message of support. We are doing this together. And this message of, I believe in your potential, even more than I could really believe in myself.
It's so interesting. And do you think that now, after hearing them and seeing that you were indeed successful in your next opportunity, do you still have this self-talk about, if something else comes my way, I will need someone to empower me again?
Yes and no. I think I don't know if you have ever heard about imposter syndrome. You can read a lot about it in the internet. If you just type imposter syndrome, there is a lot of resources that will pop up. But basically, it is when you think that you are an imposter, that you don't necessarily deserve the things that happen to you, and that one day people will find out that you're not as good as they think you are, and you're gonna fail. That's basically what is behind. And funny enough, this feeling of inadequacy or not being enough is much more common in high performers and high achievers. So the better you are, actually, the better your perform is and the better your potential is, the more you tend to feel that some points people will find out that you're not as good as they think you are. So it's funny to have that very strong proven correlation of performance and this feeling of not being good enough. And I think this is where some days I still struggle with it. And it is a long life battle of saying, yes, I can do it. So today I feel more ready than I have ever been in my past to accept those challenges and to feel ready for those challenges. But I still stumble on it sometimes. I remember when I was promoted to a director level position for the first time, I called my best friends at work to celebrate with them that I had this promotion. And they said, oh, but what is going to be your title? And I told them, oh, it's blah, director of a blah, blah, blah. But you know, I don't know why the HR calls this position director. I minimized it in front of them, the fact that it was a director position. And they caught this. They caught that I didn't feel ready, and therefore I was telling them not to mind so much the fact that it was a director position. And one of them, and that's why it is absolutely great to surround yourself with people that believe in you and that can be there for you in those moments, she called me later and say, Mayara, this is imposter syndrome. You got a director level position because you are a director. Congratulations. Feel happy and proud about it. So I was very lucky to have that friend at that moment that would call me up on it. But it's just a proof to say that it's not because you have achieved a lot in your career that at some point you just feel ready for everything. It's absolutely normal to have doubts, to have moments where you're not 100% sure, and then to surround yourself with this environment of other people that believe in you and that can be there for you in this journey so that you can be courageous about your career moves.
Thank you so much. And it's so lovely to hear that you are surrounded by the right people. And it takes time sometimes to find them, but when you do find them, cherish them, because you will need this boost. And as you said, it's a lifetime of thinking those things, even if you work on them, etc. It's difficult. It's difficult because, as you said, your role are changing, your responsibility are changing. So it means that you also have to rethink your position. So absolutely, positive self-talk, surrounding yourself by the right people is definitely a life changer. And it leads us to our last question. You have shared a lot of advice with everyone. It feels like it's very repetitive, but I want to finish on this because I know that you probably will just emphasize on the great advice you've shared so far. So last question, do you have any final advice for our listeners?
I do have one. I think if you have to pick only one advice, that's what
the mindset I try to think about your question. And for me, it is to find the right balance between staying humble and curious, and as well believing in yourself and knowing your worth. And there is a reason why I say it's a balance, because if you stay humble and curious, but only that, then you can end up diminishing yourself and having, therefore, imposter syndrome, or not necessarily going for opportunities because you're going to feel so humble that you're going to feel that you're not ready or not worth. And at the same time, if you believe in yourself and know your worth too much, but this is not in equilibrium with staying humble and curious, then this is where you might indeed reach out to opportunities that you're not ready for. And you can come across as being very full for yourself and being understood as someone, not humble is the right word. So the sweet spot there is where you can have the strength to grow limitless. If you can balance those two characteristics of being humble, being curious, asking questions, always pursuing to learn and putting yourself in the shoes of eternal learning, lifelong learning, but at the same time, believing in yourself and in your potential and knowing your worth, then you're going to be unstoppable.
Those are great advice to finish this episode. Thank you so much, Mayra, for everything that you shared, for every thought that you put behind the questions and every insights that you took the time to deeply explain to the people who are listening to us. I'm so grateful for your time, and I really hope that you will inspire people as much as you just inspired me.
Thank you.
Those are great advice to finish this episode. Thank you so much, Mayra, for everything that you shared, for every thought that you put behind the questions and every insights that you took the time to deeply explain to the people who are listening to us. I'm so grateful for your time, and I really hope that you will inspire people as much as you just inspired me.
Thank you so much. We talked a little bit about purpose, and I think the work that you're doing here has a lot of purpose, and that's what drove me to be here with you today. So I strongly appreciate that you decided to do this and put your energy and your passion into this beautiful project. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Maya. I highly appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Please do reach out on X and Threads and Instagram and TikTok. If you have any questions, if you want me to deep dive on more elements next time, I have an amazing guest. And if you just have any other suggestions, looking forward to hearing from you. See you soon.